Rolling.
So, Mr. Nick Nunziata, I have a couple of topics here that I'd like to go over with you, a couple of questions I'd like to ask. I think all of the listeners would like to hear about as well, but let's start off with a few things about your history and your past. Let's go with one of the biggest fish in the sea, Chud.com. What is your opinion looking back on everything Chud?
It was great. It's great. It still is great. It has potential to still be great. Chud happened in like 95 or 96. I was working at a company called Intertech, and I started to do movie reviews on a mailing list, a company-wide email, which was not a good thing. But I would send a company-wide email out with reviews of every movie that came out, and I called it the Chud Report. And then a friend of mine was there, and he had web programming experience, so I started to use him and learn a little bit about it. And then I launched Chud.com, which at the time, I mean, a four-letter domain was nothing. And, we went ahead and put it up. And then, while I was working, I did that. And, it was a lot of fun. It was an outlet for my retardation, and it was good. And then I think in 1999, my father died, and I was doing contract work, and I said, fuck it. So I quit all of my jobs, and I was just not sure what I wanted to do, but I was enjoying writing about movies. And with the Star Wars prequels coming up, there was a lot of traffic, and it was before the internet went straight to Jimmy's asshole. So it became a full-time thing. It wasn't really lucrative or anything like that. There was a couple of really good years, but over the course of time, we got some great contributors, we got some great readers, and those message boards, I think, opened up in 99, changed everything,
Now, who are some of the notables in the contributors pool and the message board folks that you can think of off the top of your head that really helped you out?
I don't want to disrespect anybody who I forget, but Brian Kukol was my first real partner. Joram Menka, who ran a Tolkien site, and then he came on and helped us. And then the estimable Dave Davis, Devin Faraci, Smiling Jack Ruby, Mark Wheaton, Alex Riviello, Johnny Butane, Ryan Rotten, who became Ryan Turek, who's still kicking ass. Lots and lots of people. Eileen, Jeremy Butler, there's just the list of people that have written for Chud, Jeremy Slater. I mean, these are people that a lot of them I'm no longer friendly with, but a lot of them, I mean, it seems like the cool thing about the site is that it's dynamic and its approach has somehow lent itself to people being free. Some other sites are built around their shtick or whatever it is, and fake names and not owning up to whatever your things are and your beliefs and your statements and all that. And I think Chud's always had kind of an approach that you have an opinion. They may not agree, but at least you're standing behind your name. And I think a lot of the people that have come off the site have had a very strong opinion, for better or worse, and they've parlayed that into success of one shape or another. So I think there's been a lot of great folks that have come out of the site. Daniel Bellori, low shot. It's a good group. It's been great. And I think the other thing about Chud is the message boards. I mean, I consider some of the people on the boards, especially some of the long-timers, a family, like Jacob Singer and Bucho and, Blofeld and fucking Vince Labelito Cenzo there's so many people. There's been there's people that I don't even know. I don't know much about, but they've been so instrumental in helping us in ways, that surprise me. It's just a really special group. Some of them, there are some fucking assholes. Also, I forgot to mention those. There's some fucking horrible people that I hate.
Well, there's people who come from...
Lest you think this is a telethon or something. Those guys need to fucking die in a fucking vat of hot fire.
Oh, and sure, let them go fuck off. But, everybody comes from all kinds of different places all over the world, has different stories. But what do you think draws all these people to Chud? What do you think brings everybody together into this family dynamic, whether they're on the boards or whether they're part of the contributing pool? What is your opinion on that, where all these people originate?
I think the thing is, if once you see the name Chud, I think 80% of the people are going to not be interested. You know, so there's already like a built-in safeguard, and it was not intentional. It just worked out that way. I thought it was just fun because I love the movie, and it was dumb, and it was easy. But the thing I've noticed is it's kind of a litmus test before you even click. So the people that actually decide to come to Chud are already twisted in one way or another. So they've already got kind of that – they're primed. And then so I think there's that, and I think also once you go to the site, it's black. It's always been black. It's always been kind of like weird, and there's always been that sewer motif or that kind of tentacle motif, or there's always been some sort of an element to it that – is just like slightly left of center, and I think that's been attractive to the right people. And then, of course, the fact that, you know, 90% of the stuff we write is written with not sarcasm, but with we're trying to steer people towards the truth. You know, like, you know, if it's a movie that we should champion, we try to get on board early, and we try to weed through the shit. And if it's a movie that deserves to be hated, we kind of try to single it out too, but I think above all things is we love to be proven wrong. And I think that's evident in a lot of the stuff that Chud does, is we love to be wrong about movies. It's okay to like Fast and the Furious if it's a good movie, and a lot of people kind of make their minds up beforehand, and I think the people that read the site have started to realize that, you know, we're going to make fun of something with you. But by golly, if it proves us wrong, we'll be the first to admit it. And I think that the message boards and the community of the Chud kind of speak the same language.
Yeah,
except for those people that suck every butt and should fall down 17 flights of escalators and be visited by Pinhead and the Chatterer.
Well, I think that kind of comes with just really shooting for that sort of niche audience. I think really you're going to get people from the positive and the negative side of things. And, you know, just that being that sort of family dynamic, you're not always going to have the most functional and positive sort of environment. You're just going to have that drama every so often. But has that been a negative impact towards the site at all, or is that just something with a grain of salt?
I mean, we're never going to be Yahoo. I mean, it's you know, the problem was is there was a period of time where I really thought that we were mainstream. And we kind of approached the business as if we were mainstream. We approached the site if it were mainstream. And we really were too big for our britches. We weren't. And we never will be. And, you know, there's a kind of a calm in knowing that it'll never be that. So, whatever. And I think, you know, there are people. The thing that I think is the most amazing thing is there are people that are still on the site that have way outgrown internet message board culture. You know, there's no reason you should be on a message board at age 40. I mean, really. I mean, unless it's like a dating site or it's like a, you know, whatever your hobby is, or if you're like just trying to kill yourself or whatever. But, you know, the thing is, there's something about it that, you know, and the community has kind of grown bigger than the site itself. So it's like there's a family element that is completely divorced from whatever the material of the site. So, you know, for whatever it's worth, we've created a, you know, little place for people to be safe.
Now, I remember you back in the day.
Except for those fucking assholes who should fucking be visited by fucking vampire bats, bitten about the penis head, especially the women, dragged off into the night and humanoided from the deep forever.
Just decapitated from both ends.
Just raped all day.
Well, I know a while back you had mentioned that you had a Chud convention where you brought all of these pretty much family members together, and that was one of those events where everyone just kind of came in for the love of the site, but also to really connect with everyone that they talked to, everyone that they interacted with.
This is before the Xbox Kinect came out, but... Yes, we did a few things. We did Chud West, which was there was a rest in peace, Bill Bowen, a Scientologist, reader of Chud, had a very fancy house in the Hollywood Hills, and he invited a select group of us out there west to have a party in his mansion. If I remember correctly, Juliette Lewis, Giovanna Ribisi were involved.
Nice.
Maybe Kelly Preston. Basically, Scientologists.
To talk to.
Yeah. And then a handful of others. I still have my Chud West hat. And that was a really good gathering. And we ate at this restaurant called Vita, No longer in business. The best steak I've ever had. I could still taste it. $19.99. I could still taste the steak, which is great. Still
so what do
tastes
you
good.
Think and about something like that happening now in present day. What do you think of the possibility?
If
of
I held
all
one
show?
Now, it would basically be me and like another guy.
So pretty so, much this.
This is it. This is Chud East. No, I. No, I don't think. I don't think. First of all, people have lives, and they're too. You know, all the people that were big Chud supporters now have kids and mortgages and club feet and all that kind of shit. So it's impossible. But and I don't think the site's traffic's there. But I there are people I literally would. I would love to meet Bucho. I would love to meet Blake Corral. I would love to meet any of the hot girls that read the site, like sexually.
Which are plenty.
Sexually.
Who are constantly
penis in,
beating off
penis
to the
in,
site.
Penis in mouth.
There are so
in,
many articles
penis
that
in
get
vagina.
Girls great wet on.
Penis underneath. You know, all sorts of. But no, there's a lot of great folks. And then we did another couple of Chud things, too. We did coffee meetings every Saturday at 11:22 in Atlanta. So we would have like a group of like 5 to 15 people every week for a long time. And then we had. Another, what was I thinking? There was another event I was thinking, when Hellboy came out.
Yeah.
A handful of us rented a Town and Country truck. Caesar, Will, Justin, me, Steve.
All of the.
Probably another white
person.
Much. And we drove all the way to Texas, and we met with Guillermo del Toro and Mike Mignola and Ron Perlman, and we hung out with them. And then somebody named whose name on the message boards at the time was Sean Bateman, who is now Ben David Grabinski, who is a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And Greg Clark, who is a filmmaker, who and goddamn, so many other people. We had a nice group of people. We all convened into Austin, Texas, ate great barbecue, hung out. Everybody saw Hellboy way before it came out. Had a great time hanging out with the principals. And I think that was a spiritual experience. I mean, not to take credit, but I think a lot of I think it helped a lot of the people that were there kind of get more comfortable with stepping into their careers in some respect. Like, I think it was instrumental to see how sometimes the good guys can win, you know. And Guillermo and Ron Perlman are like the examples of the good guys. Like, they are us. So I think that was like neat to take that barrier away for some of those people. So
if there's anything like that you could think about doing in the next few years or beyond, is there something that you would just like to have as either a gathering or some sort of support for, you know, great team out there that's making a film or doing something along those lines?
Yeah, I think, I mean, honestly, I've got a lot of projects that I've been working on forever. And if any one of those gets made, I think, the logical thing is to have Chud be involved and to have the readership be involved.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to do that with Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, but it wasn't logical, and Grizzly Park wasn't worth doing it for. Meg was the big unfired bullet in that whole thing. Like, that was always a part of the game plan from day one, was to make it a thing. And basically my personal success is tied to this. So like, if there's if anything ever happens, one of the main things I want to do is create. We had talked about having a Chud Con, which I don't. The conventions are blown out now, but I think yes, I think there is some sort of a situation where we should do that. The only thing I don't want to do is I don't want to build it around a genre thing or like a movie or like a re-release or anything like that. I think it should be about the people rather than a product. So
yeah.
I'm just waiting for the real situation to come up. And honestly, I think one of the important things that we need to do is remind people. You know, or get a gauge for the people that still feel that way, who are still excited and want to do that, you know, because I mean, even if it's 10 people, if it's the right 10 people,
sure,
it'll be amazing. If it's the wrong 10 people, I want them to fall down and die forever.
Just the deep abyss of In the Mouth of Madness.
Just
let them
fucking awful,
fall into
an
the
awful
dark
end to their lives.
So if there was, let's say, the planets align, Reanimator 4. winds up actually happening, what perfect event would you center around that family coming together, everybody who involved or peripheral, what have you, just getting together as a group and celebrating that family dynamic that this product, not the focus on the film itself or anything like that, but just the togetherness and everything that came to be in that way, what would it be? What would that event be?
I don't think it would be any particular event. I think it would be just a matter of finding a location that's secluded, that all these people to convene in, to where they could spend 3 days together, you know, whether it be some mountain lodge or some beach house or some, penthouse suite, you know, just some location, some isolated location. Imagine if we got like, you know, 15 people on a cruise together, you know, and then basically each person's suite was the, you know, each night we watched a different movie or whatever, you know, like that's the thing. I don't think it should be about like the release of movie X or like, you know, because you're just doomed to fail.
Sure.
Because goddamn, what if it's a prequel or what if it's the Thing remake or, you know, what if it's just something that's not good? Or even if it's something like a Scott Pilgrim or like Pacific Rim, something we know is great, but it's so, you know, it's not a sure thing. You know, I'd rather it be something that's about the people and about the location. Because, I mean, a controlled environment just bears so much fruit. I'd just rather it be that.
So what do you think about genre films themselves? When you look back, what are your fondest memories of sci-fi, horror, that special kind of action film, comedy, and what have you? What do you reflect on the most when you look back at good genre film? With fondness, whether it's, you know, something that you like genuinely for it being great, what have you, or whether it's just one of those things like Dead Heat that's just so fucking ridiculous, it's fantastic.
The problem I've had now is even though my site's built around it and I spent so many years loving movies that are less than good, I don't spend the time on them anymore. Like, if there's a movie that's like substandard, that's fun, I'll enjoy it, but it's not something I'm going to spend a ton of time with. Like, something like Splinter comes out, and I really dig it, and I love elements of it, and I'll watch it, and I'll recommend it, but I'll move on. Like, as far as rewatchability, you know, there are very few films that demand that anymore, and it's weird. Like, it's completely a temperature thing. Like, you know, for some reason, recently, you know, I watched Prince of Darkness 3 times, and that's not a very good movie, but that's the exception. Typically, I'm watching, like, No Country for Old Men or The Departed or, you know, just something that just is easy to put on and sure, go to a happy place. I don't get the happy place thing anymore from Fright Night 2,
right,
where I used to. So it's just kind of like those things served a purpose, and they help build who I am, but I don't really to go back only cheapens the experience. So I'm at a point where it's not worth it, because I'd rather preserve that beautifulness of those cock and balls movies that I loved growing up.
Well, having those dog shit films that are just great in retrospect be your foundation, what do you think about the current state of horror and the genre picture today? All of the nonsense that's coming out with the regurgitation of bullshit that
all of that. Like, you know, the funny thing is like, James Wan is kind of the institution right now, but
sure,
The Conjuring's a very good movie. You know, he did a really good job. But that's like the business of making horror movies, and the checks and balances overrides everything. Like, you're not going to see people make Society. Not that that was a theatrical big deal, but, you know, Human Centipede exists. You know, and it has a home. Not that that was a good movie or anything, but, you know, so I think horror, the genre is very much built around finding those buttons to push in executives right now, you know, so whether it be, you know, Conjuring or Last Exorcism or whatever it is, whatever the niche is, you know, it's fine. But we have people like Adam Green and Joe Lynch and guys like that that are fighting the fight. You know, there's plenty of good filmmakers out there doing it. Aja, you know, there's like guys. So to me, it's like, instead of following the genre, or following, you know, like when I was growing up, it was whatever Fangoria recommended, or it's whatever Savini was working on, or whatever KMB was working on. And to me now, it's like, well, okay, I'm going to follow director X or filmmaker X, and, you know, and then that'll spiral off into wherever. But it's not about genre anymore. It's about filmmaker. So you're following filmmakers, and I think that's actually a better approach anyway.
And, you know, you have a lot of people in just history trying to throw things out there like, well, so-and-so filmmaker was pivotal in this movement of cinema. You look at the Kubrick catalog, you look at Fellini, you look at all of these great historical directors who were just lauded and praised in their times, but now you're looking at, you know, Iñárritu, you're looking at Cuarón, you're looking at all of these directors who have really made a name for themselves. And do you think that is really the drive, or is it the numbers when it comes down to these films actually getting made?
Well, when it comes to the guys like Iñárritu and Cuarón, although there's so much influence in their work, it's impossible to go back and find all the seeds for it. So you just got to appreciate the development of the medium. Like, because you see Michael Jordan do something doesn't mean you have to go watch Bob Cousy shoot free throws. You know, like, I think there's,
yeah,
you know, it's you have to just find, you know, there are people that just completely are ravenous and digest all that stuff. And there was a period for me that was like that. But, you know, I think that, like, those guys, I mean, you see people clawing into new terrain. And so, you know, I don't know exactly what the question was in terms of, like, what...
Well, when a film's getting made and you've got the production getting ready to actually get greenlit, and
yeah,
you've got the company behind it just looking at all the factors, do you think that, for example, Warner Brothers or Sony or anyone is going to throw money at a name or at the analysis of how much the film's going to cost to make? I mean, do you think that Scorsese is going to get the green light for anything he wants to do regardless of the budget? Same with, like, Oliver Stone? Or do you think it's all about the accounting at this point?
Yeah, I don't think there's a filmmaker in the world anymore who just gets a green light automatically. I don't care who you are.
Sure.
But I think the cool thing is that even though, like, the generic stance is that the bean counters don't know anything about movies, they all have business degrees rather than film degrees, you know, there is that element, but they're a lot more savvy than they used to be. And if you think about, like, some of the best directors aren't very bankable if you look at their work,
yeah,
but they're proven to be on budget and on time, and that's enough for a lot of people, like, in important decision-making jobs. So then they just package, you know. So if you have a director who is artistic and really brilliant paired with, like, Brad Pitt, then there's a lot, you know, there's a reason to do it.
Yeah.
Or adversely, if you have, like, a Bradley Cooper before he broke coupled with somebody who's proven they could, you know, open a picture, then it's fine. I mean, they're a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and there's a lot more factors that go into it. And even though Hollywood math never really seems to work out, I think that the system that's in place isn't really broken. I think it's working. Otherwise, you wouldn't see the guys that we're seeing directing. Like, if you look at who's directed the Bond movies, if you look at who's directed the Marvel movies,
oh yeah,
it's miraculous, you know. But of course, adversely, I'm hearing from people, like, I when I speak to Guillermo del Toro, the fact that he has so much trouble getting stuff done blows my mind, because you would think that if you were in a position of power, it's like, this guy has a finite amount of films in him, help him, you know. And it's you know, so there's a checks and balances, but the bottom line is it's impossible. If it was easy or logical, you know, it would just there wouldn't be that kind of reward to the whole thing anyway. So,
well, you look at guys like Guillermo and Edgar Wright, and you see how creative they are when they're actually able to make a film. I mean, from start to finish, 90%
they're
of
shitty
the time.
Filmmakers, by the way. They're both homosexuals.
Which is a negative thing, and
awful,
all of their films are negative and should
awful.
Be burned all the way down to the print, every copy,
right down
even
to
the digital
right
copies.
Down to the man ass.
Burn them all.
Okay.
Whenever we see them actually be able to create and release a genuinely unique film, do you think that's just one of those one in a million shots where they're just lucky enough to be able to actually have it happen, or do you think that's something that might still be thrown out there every so often? Do you think the future of actually creative and inventive cinema is in trouble, or is it going to be able to continue?
No, I mean, look, we got Gravity opening this week into major numbers.
Brilliant.
And that is that's a ridiculous, like, that movie should not be what it is. It's a quirky, threadbare movie that has found a home. I just think it's great because because of how much turnover there is in film and how the money has to get spent eventually, there's just a way to convince somebody that Scott Pilgrim is a good idea to invest in. And I don't think in his heart of hearts Edgar thought it was going to be like a blockbuster. He just knew it had to happen, and he made it happen, and he took it on the chin. That's that, you know, we need guys like that, because it's just there are a few people in every generation that have the ability to do those, like, just ridiculously new and crazy things that polarize people that are maybe not successful out of the gate but reap major rewards in the long run. I just think there's you know, they balance out the Michael Bays, they balance out the Len Wisemans and all of that. And as a viewer, I mean, our admission price is, what, $8, $10 for this whole thing?
And then you look at IMAX, and it's
crazy.
Up to $13,
I know, but even that, for, like, that's our buy-in.
Yeah.
For all of this shit. It's like one of the best deals in the history of Earth. You know, that we could, you know, with no risk, just fucking experience the barometer of Fast Six, Gravity, and then whatever Werner Herzog's put out. You know, it's like it's great. It's amazing. If I jumped off this deck right now and died, this would be the best podcast of all time.
Definitely. We'd have to record.
I'm thinking about it all the way down. I am thinking about it. All right. I'm going to pause. Hold on.
So we have this. In-